Hello and welcome to the CISS podcast. This is the On the Spot series by China Forum. In this series, we return to the platform of international forums and webinars where leading minds in academia, government, business, technology, and media deliver novel, collaborative responses to the global issues of the day.
Hello, and welcome to the CISS podcast, On the Spot series. This is Beibei with China Forum. In today's program, we'll continue with a discussion on anti-terrorism. As the world becomes unstable with outbreaks of regional conflicts, terrorism has shown signs of rising. Or the question might be, has it ever left? Regional conflicts increase the flow of weapons, while an increasingly segmented global financial system makes it harder to track terrorist activities. What efforts are needed to combat terrorism at the national or international level? How should individuals view terrorism rationally? On our program today, we have Dr. Victor J. Willey, Executive Director at the Middle East Institute, Switzerland, a think tank working exclusively on the Middle East and North Africa. Dr. Willey shared with us his views on terrorism in a more fragmented world, and how China and mid-powers, like countries in the Middle East, are playing a bigger role in mediation and conflict resolution to settle the root causes of terrorism. Hello, Dr. Willey. Thank you so much for taking the time to join our interview at China Forum. So with rising geopolitical tension and conflicts, do you see a resurgence of terrorism around the globe?
Yes, definitely. Although we have to ask ourselves if it really receded ever, the phenomenon of terrorism. I'm talking about modern terrorism in the age of the nation state. Terrorist groups, they've never really disappeared. They might have been dismantled. ISIS might have been dismantled to some extent, but now they're re-emerging. And all these things will contribute to embolden terrorism, terrorist movements worldwide.
I think the last time when the public, you know, everybody in the world was concerned about terrorism, that was back in 9/11. Mm-hmm. And decades later today, we are fully in the information age with much newer technology for communication, for transportation, and also there's an explosion in AI technology. Mm-hmm. How has all these new developments impacted terrorism? What are the new characteristics of terrorism in the new age?
I think terrorist movements will adapt to the new technologies, they will use the new technologies. If you have less control over these platforms and less means of surveying these platforms, it will become, you know, comparatively easier for terrorists and terrorist groups to use these as recruiting platforms, as organizing platforms, etc. But I think the fundamental strategy of terrorists is going to be the same. Because terrorists are always stateless actors, actors that are sort of outside the power networks of the day. And they're always non-state actors, at least. Of course, you can talk about state terrorism in various instances. But the way terrorism is usually seen and talked about is by asymmetric warfare, by groups that have less power, that have less means, etc. They fight against a bigger power. And I think one thing that changed, or that is about to change today, is the international system and the sort of slow emergence of a multipolar system compared to a unipolar or a bipolar system. And what does that mean if the world is becoming more fragmented? If you have a more segmented system, presumably also you have a more segmented financial system internationally. So you have different blocks having their different financial systems. And so it will be much harder to track terrorist activity, terrorist financing, etc. If you have a regime where you have different currencies operating and different financial regimes, different financial systems. So that will make it more difficult for states to track terrorism.
I want to move on to the Middle East, where terrorism has never really left and is still plagued by frequent wars and violent conflicts. How has Europe participated in the process of mediation and conflict resolution in the Middle East?
I mean, Europe is doing very little in terms of mediation and conflict resolution. I mean, of course, they're trying to be active in that space. But I think the problem of Europe is that they're internally divided. You have, the European Union, although it is now big institutions, but still the national interests of nation states that are prevailing. And so that means that it's much harder for the Europeans to act as a EU in the mediation space, when actually the mediation space is being more and more consumed by actors in the Middle East themselves, Turkey, Qatar, Egypt, the UAE, even the Saudis. All these powers are playing an increasingly important roles in the mediation space, as well as China, of course. China is also becoming more and more of a first-class mediator. The mediation space is moving away from, let's say, the traditional mediators like Switzerland and more into the Middle East. And governments are themselves taking a greater and greater role. You saw this, for example, with the negotiations between Hamas and Israel about the hostages, the Israeli hostages that were released. It was Qatar who was basically managing these negotiations. It is Qatar who has the link to Hamas. It's not the Swiss, it's not the European Union, it's not the French, it's not the Brits. It's actually Qatar, Egypt, and to some extent Turkey. They are playing the mediation game now.
Is that a trend you see in international politics? The nation states taking more responsibility, being more proactive in dealing with transnational conflicts?
I think yes. I think it has to do with this emerging picture of multipolarity. Of course, you have the big powers, the US and China, and to some extent Russia, to some extent India. They're playing a much greater role. And the Middle Eastern powers, which we can call middle powers, like mainly Saudi Arabia, Turkey, but also the UAE, Egypt, these powers have much less a need to side with one party or the other. Like when you had the classical Cold War, the big battle of ideologies between capitalism and communism, it was very clear, you're either with us or you're against us. And so states could either choose one side or the other. Of course, you had the non-aligned movement. But the non-aligned movement was a non-aligned movement, which means that they were not aligned with either the Russians or the Americans. But states or middle powers in the Middle East have much more of a menu to choose off. You know, they can either choose the China menu or they can choose the American menu. And of course, the American menu comes with more strings attached. Human rights, democracy, free speech, rule of law, etc. While the Chinese menu is more pragmatic.
Less sanctions.
Yeah, less sanctions, less conditions. So they can choose one or the other or both. And that gives them more power. I think that gives them structurally more power.
But still, when dealing with terrorism, because terrorism is also evolving, right, with new technology, widening their net, and as you mentioned, recruiting more people from who knows from where, you know, from the globe. How can international institutions come together to help prevent future terrorist acts? How can more organizations work together? For example, we have the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and there is the SCO, Regional Anti-Terrorist Structure, which has been successful in maintaining regional peace and stability. Will we see more of these institutions? Are there more institutions like this working toward that goal?
I think that they've been successful, but they've been successful on a regional level. I mean, it's very hard to see true international cooperation today. You know, everybody tries to do a little bit their own thing. And also you have to notice that terrorism, you know, it's a destructive force and it's horrible, etc. But it always serves a purpose. Somebody always has to gain from terrorist acts. And there is always state sponsors behind terrorism. They're not just operating in and off themselves without anybody backing them. They have to get their weapons from somewhere. They are somewhere in some territory. You know, there is borders. They need to get weapons into this territory. They need to get training, etc. And they're operating on the territory of countries. If you look at the history of terrorism, there are always other actors behind the terrorists.
So I think the formal definition of terrorism is that they're stateless actors, but still, underneath it all, someone like a state is always backing their terrorist action.
I think so, yeah. Okay. I think so. I mean, you have to show me the group that has not received any support from anybody. Terrorism, it's called terrorism and not crime because it has to have a political aim.
Mm.
You know, terrorism always has a political motive, a political aim. They want to achieve something politically.
Mm-hmm. So with the world slipping deeper into fragmentation as we see more regional conflicts, more weapons are floating around.
Mm-hmm.
Will these feed into terrorism acts?
Absolutely. And they've always done this. I mean, for example, I'm not a Ukraine expert, but all these weapons that are going to Ukraine, all these anti-ballistic systems and anti-tank systems, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Who has control over these weapons? I mean, of course there will be smugglers and groups in between and dealers that are acquiring these weapons and will sell them on.
So in face of this, what are some ways that different countries can work together to control or at least monitor, you know, where these weapons are, or to, I guess, execute better border control so we can track terrorist actions better? Other institutions a ways for?
I'm not sure about which institutions are used by countries to work together. I'm not sure.
To prevent terrorist
acts. I mean, I'm sure it's the intelligence agencies of the different countries, the security agencies of the different countries. Of course, there is intelligence sharing, there's the Five Eyes, etc. We used to have intelligence cooperation and anti-terrorist activities between Russia and the United States. I'm not sure where that stands now, but I can't imagine that there is still a very strong security and intelligence collaboration between these geopolitical rivals.
Mm. It's all complications from today's geopolitical conflicts. And also, for the general public, even just one small incident, maybe it didn't end in huge numbers of casualty, but still, you know, people all over the world hear about it, and everybody is in fear of the same thing happening. What are some ways we can look at terrorism rationally?
I think the reason why terrorism functions so well, and I say that with hyperbole, but the reason why it functions so well is because of that element of fear and because of the element of unpredictability. I mean, not sure how to manage something like this. This is something, in my view, very ancient and very primordial fear that was triggered in these attacks. And I think that's why terrorism continues to be successful, especially in a society or in societies that are obsessed with security and predictability. And it's very hard for countries to avoid or manage.
They're just playing on the element of unpredictability.
That's the thing.
And the spread of the fear.
I think it's the unpredictability that is a huge factor in terrorism. I think if you really want to fight terrorism, I think there is only two ways, and they're strongly linked. They have to do with a just social order, and one is economic development. Although, I'm not saying economic development is the only thing, because there are many terrorists that come from middle class, etc., so it's not... You're poor, therefore you're more likely to become a terrorist. It's not that at all.
Right.
But it's part of it. And the other part is political justice, social fairness. And if you want to have a just or a stable social order and a stable society, these two factors need to work in sync in order to avoid terrorism.
To get to the root of the problem. So I remember Mr. Guterres, he mentioned how the root of the problem when it comes to terrorism is fragility and instability, I think. So if we work on social order, as you mentioned, social order, economic development, and social and political justice, that will help us to root out the problem.
Yeah.
From our conversation today, I get the sense that we do need more international cooperation when it comes to the prevention of terrorism and also the fight against terrorism. And hopefully we will see more of that in the future. Yes. Thank you so much, Professor Willey.
That was my conversation with Dr. J. Willey, co-founder and executive director at the Middle East Institute, Switzerland. The interview was conducted on the sidelines of China Forum Dialogue Among the Wise in Beijing this April, with a theme of terrorism in the age of geopolitical conflict, new paradigms and new challenges. Thank you for listening, and please stay tuned for more.